Well, Mother's Day, or Mothering Sunday, as my mother insists we call it, takes us to the very heart of what it is to be human. It speaks to us of acceptance. It speaks to us of unconditional love. It speaks to us of safety and security. And of course, that's why it can be such a painful day for so many. We remember what we've lost through bereavement or separation. We're reminded of what we've never known through abandonment or lack of opportunity. And this day and all it brings speaks to our 21st century selves because it encourages us to be part of something bigger, something outside of ourselves. It encourages us to long to be home. And it's no surprise that we have those senses and longings within us because that's how our Creator has made us to be. That's our wiring, if you like. And so throughout time, humanity has tried to find such love, tried to find such purpose, such acceptance. And all too often, apart from their Creator. That's the problem that Jesus is confronting in these chapters 9 and 10 of John's Gospel. The religious leaders have been quibbling over the fact that he has healed a blind man, a man blind from birth. They seem to be questioning whether that's a good or a bad thing to do. That seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it? It's obviously a good thing to do. And the conclusion that some are working towards, and we had it at the end of our reading in verse 20, is that this Jesus must be bad or mad. How does that work out? And Jesus forces them to ask themselves a question, forces them to ask a question, are we also blind? Well, not physically blind, of course, but blind to who Jesus is, blind to the good that Jesus is offering. Have a look at verse 10, and we see what Jesus actually says about the good that he's come to bring. Middle of verse 10, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. That's the promise Jesus is making. And the question that the passage is asking us, therefore, is, are we blind to that promise? Are we blind to the fact that it is Jesus who offers us life? I was chatting to a nearly 30-year-old daughter this week, and I said to her, what does life mean for you? And she said, well, it's about being happy. And that, therefore, is about relationships. It's about the people you surround you with. And then she paused and she said, well, it's got to resonate with the sort of the real me. It's got to resonate with the core, the person that I really am. And she said, I know for you that's God, but that's not true for me. We've got to be centered. Now, you may agree with her. You may agree that life is about being happy. Life is about the relationships that contribute to that. It's about being true to ourselves. But what place does Jesus have in that? What place does the life he offers have in that? Now, I'm not going to pretend, of course, that Jesus can take the place of our mothers. But I will suggest that what we long for from our human parents and home, what we seek to create in our own intimate relationships and for our own children, what we hope to find within the church family is a grasping towards something that we can actually only find in Jesus, the life that he promises. Our longing for acceptance, our longing to receive unconditional love, our longing for safety and security, our hope of home. They're right and proper things. They're good things to be seeking. But all too often, we find ourselves looking for them in the wrong place and from the wrong people. Let's have our rogues gallery up, Guy, please. That would be terrific. There are three people on Twitter who have over 100 million followers. Katy Perry, Justin Bieber, and Barack Obama. Zoella has over 12 million followers on Facebook. on TED Talks, among the most listened to, you'll find Robert Waldinger. What makes a good life? Lessons from the longest study on happiness. Some of us prefer the more down-to-earth nonsense of horoscopes, of course. But what do we know about these people? What do we know about our favourite podcasters or journalists? Are they more reliable than Jesus? Are they more trustworthy than him? Thanks, Guy. You can take that down now. Go back to verse 10. Jesus claimed that he can provide this life is built on the fact that he is the good shepherd. I have come that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. Well, how can we know that? How can we know that Jesus isn't just another fake shepherd, another false voice in the midst of so many? How do we know that he isn't someone who promises a lot but delivers very little? Well, we're going to look at four quick reasons as to why we can and should trust him and listen to him. So, first of all, let's have the heading up, please, Guy. Jesus is committed to us, verses 11 to 13. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. Now, aliens against predator may well have been a contest worth paying for. But nobody's going to pay for the wolf against sheep contest, are they? Because we know what the outcome is. It's just obvious. Who is for the helpless sheep? Well, not the hired hand. They're in it for themselves. When the going gets tough, they get going. But the good shepherd shows his commitment to the sheep. He shows it by staying and by not running away, by being prepared to give his life to save the helpless sheep. Thanks, Guy. Let's take that away. Now, if we are the sheep in this, our weakness and vulnerability are all too obvious, aren't they? I don't know how you feel when you hear those programs that expose scams people have fallen for. And don't you go, that's just stupid. How did we manage to fall for that? Until, of course, it happens to you and you do it. Then you realize how vulnerable you are. We get ill. Our lives are thrown off course by a few centimeters of snow. But maybe we notice our vulnerability most, if we're honest, when it comes to our inability to change ourselves. Each one of us will have bits of our character we don't really like, repeated behaviours that we'd love to be able to leave behind us. But the reality is we can't. The guilt from which we'd love to be free. But there's no escape from it. Jesus gave his life to rescue us. He gives his life for the sheep. He died on the cross to show that commitment to us. He didn't run away at the size of the task. He didn't abandon you to your fate and save himself from suffering or pain. Like the very best of best friends, Jesus stayed with you. All evidence then of his commitment to us. Jesus is committed to us. Secondly, Jesus knows us. Jesus knows us. Verses 14 and 15. I am the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father and I lay down my life for the sheep. Jesus has complete knowledge of each and every one of us. Thanks, Guy. Now, Sainsbury's and Amazon think they know me. They send me vouchers so I can get more Nectar points, which is terrifically exciting. But it is quite scary because what they send me matches what I've been buying. It's just bizarre. Amazon, tell me which books I might also like, which authors I should also be reading. But they don't know who my mum is. They don't know how old she is. They don't know where she lives. They don't know what she likes doing. Theirs is an impersonal knowledge, isn't it? It's a functional knowledge. It's a knowledge that works out to their benefit rather than mine. Now, our favourite sports team wants our support. It wants our voices. It wants us to spend money on the replica kits. Those on Twitter want our following. The podcasters we listen to want to raise themselves up the list of most listened to. But they've got no idea who I am. They don't know us. They're not interested in us at all. But Jesus knows us. Not just our name, he knows us. Not just what we buy, but what we long for. He knows your hopes and your dreams. He knows your pains and your pleasures. He knows your loves and your losses. He knows, probably better than we do ourselves, how all those different pieces of our lives come together. So as we seek to find life, as we seek all those things we want in and out of life, why take advice from strangers? Why listen to those who don't know us when we could take advice from, listen to one who knows us through and through better than we know ourselves? Jesus knows us. Then thirdly, verses 16 to 18, Jesus is prepared to die for us. Not yet, Guy, thank you. I have other sheep, Jesus says, that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. There will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. Jesus makes a voluntary sacrifice. Now, you might have thought, well, surely this is just a little local Jewish difficulty, isn't it? It's between Jesus and the religious leaders. He's in sort of Jerusalem. Surely that's what it's about. But you notice here, Jesus says, I have other sheep that are not of this fold, not of the Jewish fold, not of the Jewish family. And in order that these other sheep can be brought in order that others can join this family, Jesus has to die. That was the only way that our failings and guilt that we were thinking about earlier could be dealt with. You see, the truth is we're not just helpless to stop ourselves behaving in certain ways or to change our behavior. We're also helpless when it comes to getting ourselves out of that predicament. Notably, escaping from God's just punishment on all who prefer their own way to God's way. But notice here, the good shepherd steps in. I lay down my life for the sheep. He's not forced to. He's not coerced. He willingly dies in our place that we might be forgiven. He willingly puts himself on the line so that we can be accepted. We can join the family. We can be part of his people. He has come through. He has delivered on his commitment to us. Yes, please, Guy. But we'll also be aware, won't we, that so much in life doesn't deliver. There are so many broken promises. Did you hear about the Big Cheese Festival in Brighton? Guess what they ran out of at the Big Cheese Festival in Brighton? We all know what KFC have run out of, don't we? The sea. And some of you sadly experienced the fact that Southeast Water ran out of water. That's what happens, isn't it? People don't deliver on their promises. Yes, please, Guy. You see, those we often look to, those we idolize, those we have pictures of on our walls, those we listen to and watch so much, they don't know us. They're not committed to us. They've got no reason to make your life better, let alone to die for you. Yes, please, Guy. But Jesus is committed to us. And he's committed to us even though he knows us through and through. He knows what we're really like and what we're really thinking, the things that we manage to keep from closest friends, family, and certainly church. Yet despite that, despite knowing all of that, he was committed to us enough, he loved us enough to die on the cross for us. What a great reason to listen to his voice, to learn from him what life is all about. Fourthly, Jesus will rise from the dead. Verse 17. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord, and I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I received from my Father. Jesus claims to defeat death. Where are the great leaders of the past? Where are the gurus and the guides? Where are the mystics, the intellectual giants, the great leaders? Well, we know where they are because we go and visit their tombs and their memorials, don't we? One alone stands apart. Jesus. There is no tomb. And he said it would be so. Now that is something, death, which lies ahead of each and every one of us. You may view it as a great adventure, an exciting journey. Well, as you set out on an exciting journey or a great adventure, why not pay attention to one who has been there before? A friend of mine's brother and sister-in-law are planning a trip from Kenya to Ethiopia just after Easter. They've done a lot of research and looked at lots of maps. They've made sure that they've got sort of certain places booked to stay, but know that quite often they're just going to be in their camper van. They're not going to be able to do that. They've taken lots of advice about what they need and some security precautions, all sorts of things. They are going into this trip very well prepared. Whereas a humanist relative of Suzanne's, speaking about death, put it like this: relishing the next adventure with enthusiasm, but without preparation, without planning, without Jesus. Why is humanity so blind? Jesus said he would die. Jesus said he would rise from the dead. I will take my life up again. And yet we won't listen to him. We won't listen to one who has been there before us. What more does he need to do to convince us that he's trustworthy? Now, of course, rather than admit we've been wrong, we prefer to hide in the nonsense conclusion of verse 20. Many of them said, Jesus has a demon and is insane. Why listen to him? And that is a conclusion that some of you may want to leave here with this morning. And you may well want to do that because admitting we're wrong is hard. I think it's particularly hard for two groups of people here this morning. It's particularly hard for those who are older. It means accepting that your whole life has been lived without the one person who can give you the life you've always wanted. It's also hard for us men, because it's our pride that prevents us from saying sorry, prevents us from saying we're wrong, even to Jesus himself. But what better way is there than to prove we're men of courage, men of integrity, than by taking this harder road, facing up to what hasn't delivered in life, cutting our losses and making the best of the rest of the time that is left to us? That's what you do at work, isn't it? If something wasn't working, you change it. Maybe you've got a conversation in the office tomorrow, next week, exactly along those lines. It's what a good football manager does. And although it hurts me to say, that was why what Allegri did at Wembley against Spurs for Juventus on Wednesday night was so brilliant. He made the changes he needed to make and Juventus won the game. Whew, got that out, thank goodness for that. There we are, never mind. Are we willing to do that? Are we willing to make the necessary changes? Are we willing to own up that they need to be made? Or will you continue to be blind to what Jesus is offering you and the life he holds out? Will you judge him to be mad or bad, despite the fact that he's delivered on all that he said he would do? He did die and he did rise again. Yes, please, Guy. Jesus promises us life. He promises to meet all those deepest longings that we have. Why should we trust him? Because he's committed to us. Because he knows us. Because he is the one who laid down his life for us. Mothering Sunday reminds us of our need for acceptance, our need for unconditional love, our need for safety and security and home. This year, may this day point us to the one who came to give us life in all its fullness. The Jesus who said, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep."